Hello and welcome. I'm Matt, and by the grace of the Nashville Public Library, I'm here to talk about the creative process and the joy of appreciating the creations of others. Thankfully, I'm not going to do it alone. Joining me today is a pottery instructor, supply warehouse manager, and resident kiln repair specialist at the Clay Lady, Alexi Smith.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, man.
So you just came from the studio.
Yes.
Yeah. What you been up to today?
Today, it's Wednesday. Last week, we had registration for our next round of classes that starts next week. Wild. So this week is like a break week between like the end of last session and the start of this coming one. So it's like, for the most part, it's like more low key. We, outside of teaching classes, where we also sell to like to suppliers and also hobbyists and universities and schools, and they're still going. So they're still ordering clay, glazes, materials, and that kind of thing. So we still stay busy, even though our students aren't there. But it has been slower since we don't have hundreds of people on campus. it's like a smaller group. So just fulfilling orders that have been coming in. And we had a few weird orders come in. And that's just like weird stuff. They come through and they ask for a certain clay body that only vitrifies at a certain temperature. But then they get a bunch of low fire stuff. And you're like, those aren't going to match well. So it's more like having a conversation with the teachers and But some of them, they get it, but they don't quite get it. And we want to make sure they get the right material for their projects and stuff so they'd be most successful. So just phone calls, emails, weird stuff I never thought I'd get into when making pots.
I have lots of questions about like your background, your process.
Yeah.
But obviously, we're going to keep coming back to the Clay Lady.
Yeah, sure.
And so if you want to introduce a little bit what Clay Lady's campus is and what all happens there for people who may not know.
Oh, okay. So the Clay Lady's campus is an educational facility of sorts where we have our Mid-South Ceramics Supply Store, which I am employed through. Basically, the Clay Lady started about, she'll tell you if you ever get her on. She's been being Clay Lady for 40 some odd years. Mm-hmm. And through that, she used to go out to all the schools and do like little workshops with kids from anywhere from a group of 10 to a group of several hundred by herself, with maybe like a help of Joseph, her son, and her helper Denise. They would go out to these places, do workshops with these kids, take them back home, do all this other stuff, and bring them back. And eventually it got to the point where she ended up buying Mid-South Ceramics and being part business owner with her business partner. And then they built out the campus to be a one-stop shop where now all the kids come to her. Less travel expense, also have access to all the clay materials that she needs, that the students need, all in one-stop shop. So they'll come in for class, they can buy materials, and then they go right back into the classroom.
Yeah.
So they don't have to like travel across town and then come back. So it's a one-stop shop. And then on campus, there are, as employees, there's about 11 of us. But total, there are like almost 60 resident artists that have little studio spaces or a shared space that pay for access to materials, glazes, and just a place just to make and store their stuff as they're in the process of making this, that, and the other.
Yeah. And there's also like sale space for a lot of that stuff.
Yes. So in the front building is the gallery building where we do have shelves with people's work on there that has prices that people come in and just buy stuff. They like always hosting events. They're always going on where people just show up and buy stuff or just get a cup of coffee or just hang out. And we're always just open to having anyone and everyone just show up whenever.
Yeah.
Within reason, you know. Not going to show up at like 9 o'clock in the evening and expect me to.
I need a mug.
First off, I'm not going to be there.
Nope.
Secondly, I don't know how to turn on this register. So, yeah.
Yep. Well, I definitely want to get back to sort of how the interplay of your warehouse work, your creative work, everything else. But backing up way further from that, how did you get started with ceramics or pottery? And if I may, before we get there, there's going to be a theme here that I am a bit of a novice and like I'm not particularly knowledgeable about this topic, which is part of why you're here, because I'm curious.
Yeah.
If you want to tell me the most accurate term for what you do, how the terms of like ceramics, pottery, sculpture like interact with one another.
Okay. Well, it's all working with clay and being like some type of clay artist. I started in the world of clay and pottery at the age of 11 is when I first got my hands dirty. So it's been like 25 years of making pots and doing stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I started at like my local like rec center back home in Kansas and got into that. And luckily, as I just kept taking classes there, luckily my mom was like, yes, whatever to get you out of trouble. It's either that or she took us to the bowling alley. So I was doing one or the other.
you're chucking a significant object regardless.
Yes, regardless, just manipulating a thing, which is pretty fun. So I started doing that around late age 11, just kept doing it. And then that's like, what, sixth grade? I had an art teacher that was very exploratory and making art in our artistic development and just kept trying to push us into doing stuff. And one day she just walked in and was like, we're going to mess with clay today. And I was ecstatic.
Yeah.
Me thinking, I thought we were going to get on the potter's wheel. I never done that before. It was always hand built, but we did hand building at first. So that's where you just have the clay in your hand and you're molding it to be whatever. So think Play-Doh,
yeah,
but more permanent, essentially.
Less edible.
Yes, less edible. Still doesn't taste great. Yeah. So started around there, and luckily in the school district I was in, there was access to constantly take a clay class throughout every semester, like through middle school. Went into high school where they had a dedicated clay class that I was one of two students that my teacher ever had that took it every semester, freshman year all the way through senior year.
Wow.
And just kept rolling with it. He once told me, well, we got to about junior year, I would say it was the first year, junior year. I walk in and he's like, okay, so here's the thing. His name is Mr. Knott. Love the guy. Shout out to Mr. Knott. He's the bee's knees. walking into class, he's like, so I've never had someone make it this far. So how about you just tell me what you're going to do?
Yeah.
And we'll just grade you on that. I was like, sweet.
lay the track in front of us.
Yeah. He's like, I have a couple project ideas I want you to tackle, but everything else the rest of the semester is like, you just tell me and I'll give you a timeline to get it done and we'll just see how it turns out.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. And that's where I got my first interaction with teaching because he was one guy. We had this hand building class and the wheel class in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to take hand building first before you went to the wheel class. And when it was just him, he would take care of the hand builders first. Mm-hmm. So that would eat up the first 45 minutes, almost an hour. Then he would come over to the wheel throwers and talk to them and get us like kind of started. But by the time he got done with the demo there, you had maybe like 5 minutes to try.
Sure.
When it got to that point, he's like, hey, here's the deal. When you come to class, I want you to get the wheel people started. I'll get the hand builder started. And then we'll swap. So I was basically like a teacher's assistant at that point without being formally into that. So it was like an easy A because I just showed up and did what I wanted. But it just kept me very grounded for the most part. I'm very much an ADHD kid.
Sure.
Of like constantly have to be touching things or moving around. And clay was the few things where when I got into it, time just slipped away. I wasn't distracted because my whole focus was on the thing. Just like I think what most artists they experience when they're doing their thing is like time disappears and like nothing else can phase you.
Yeah.
And that's how that was one thing that I noticed in myself that I could be grounded here and not distracted, not anxious, not angry or sad. I'm just making pots.
Yeah.
I'm just doing things. I'm trying out stuff. It gave me a sense of not the sense of not caring, but taking life a little bit less seriously.
Yeah, it takes the edge off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Back in that like middle school art class where you were trying different kinds of art and you were first introduced to clay, do you have an idea of whether it was like the tactility of it or anything in particular that drew you to it that had those effects?
Very tactile.
Yeah.
I'm a very tactile person. I'm always like touching things and like high-fiving people.
Sure.
And if you know me and get to know me long enough, I'm constantly always open for a high five or a hug. Doesn't matter who you are, but I'm very much a tactile person. And like before we got into like clay, the products we had before that was like paper mache. Really got into that. I made some pretty cool stuff. Don't have it anymore because
Is the nature of paper mache.
So nature of paper mache, and also, like, I'm kind of rambunctious, and especially as a kid, I was known to break things because I was playing with them too hard.
Mm.
And they weren't toys. They were sculptures. But, sure. You know, I was using them like toys.
Yeah.
So that tactile stuff just gets me really into it. I was very much into building Legos as a kid, just using my hands as much as possible. And that just allowed me to be dirty, which as a kid I was like, yes, please. And also make like these really pretty things that came out. And it's always a shot in the dark, no matter like when you're making with clay. Like it looks cool here, but the next step it could completely change.
Mm.
And that fascinated me.
So those last couple of years of high school when Mr. Knott just sort of gave you license to do like, what do you want to do? And then we can judge it. Are there any of those projects you still think about? Or was there anything that stood out to you as like something you were really proud of?
The one I always think about was this teapot I made. Mm. It was like a rectangular type shape, but I also had it on a weird curve. It was wild. I'm not sure where it even came from, but I hand built it, slab built it together. That's where you roll out the clay into like slab pieces, like flatter pieces, and then you like cut out your shapes and kind of like build the walls and use those angles. And I had this idea. I didn't sketch it out or anything. I just went for it. I'm like, this is just what I'm going to do. He thought I was crazy at first. I'm like, I'm gonna try it. He's like, okay. Did it. Got it all together. It turned out pretty all right. I mean, it was heavy as all get out because I was still learning. So it wasn't like functional per se, but it was more sculptural.
Sure.
But I put a lot of time and effort into that thing. Mm-hmm. And then we used to go to these art shows or art exhibitions where for like high schoolers, we would all bring our things and showcase them in like this art exhibit. And they will get judged on like best of show, best use of like tactics or colors or whatever, and that piece won best of show.
Wow.
in like the clay realm of things. And that was like, I would say, one of the first times I got an award for like my own efforts and not like a participation award.
Sure.
And I was very taken back, and it was very affirming of like, oh, I don't just like doing this, but apparently I'm kind of okay at this, or like at least my ideas are being translated and being received. So then that led into like, okay, I want to just keep doing this, and slowly but surely, now we're here.
Yes.
There's other things and hurdles we ran into, as like we always run into, like when you're in that transitioning from like those high school years and those college years, and boy, those college years. And then like in there, you like kind of find more parts of yourself that you want to be more of, and parts of yourself you're like, we just like kind of push that stuff aside.
Yeah.
And clay was one of those things, like I always wanted to be doing this in some capacity. Whether it be like a full time, I'm always making stuff, or I'm just doing stuff on the side. Either way, I got to be making stuff with my hands in clay specifically, or I'm going to go crazy.
And I feel like that transition you're describing of like being in a very exploratory space in your classes in high school, going to recognition, like that knowledge that like, oh, I'm actually good. Wait, whatever.
Right.
Good means that.
Right.
That always feels like a tough space to get into and get beyond.
Yeah.
And still be able to like explore and enjoy yourself while you have like new expectations of the thing that you made.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was very hard in like college, because I went from in high school being like, I knew what I'm doing, went to junior college and did clay in there, and I didn't quite jive with my clay instructor in junior college. Like, me and him were button heads. I think it was just more like I was being stubborn. He's a cool guy. We're cool now. But for whatever reason, I was like, I don't like you. And I was like, and like my teenage angsty side didn't come out until like I was in college. And I'm like, this is weird. Why am I being so like anti-authority type stuff? Like, he's the one I was always butting my head against and like going against what he was telling. Just would do my own things. Projects would turn out nice. I still would get a good grade. Mm. But what I learned from that, I learned that maybe his teaching style is not the way I would like to teach or be taught, is basically what I learned from there in that sense. But then going from there into university, where I was being taught by a different guy, and he rattled the cage of my making.
Hmm.
My making used to be very like tight, is what they would is what you call it. Like, you can see the silhouette of like, let's say like the porcelain vase shape, where like, you know, if you think of like early Grecian type vases where they had like the lions and the big bellies, mm-hmm. much like, you know, the movie Hercules and the, yep. the ladies, like those type of jars. Like it was very much like that kind of stuff I was making where it's very, you can see the silhouette and like mm-hmm. you can see like the how like sharp and tight and just well they were, it was crafted. And in college, my instructor, his name's Lars, like he would just notice it. Long story short, I was doing graphic design for like 3 years. Oh, never made it further into the program than like freshman stuff because I just didn't – apparently I wasn't trying. And the teachers all saw it. Anyways, dropped out, came back to school, and I was like, I'm going to take pottery but also do graphic design because that's where the money is. Mm. So I was going to go – but pottery is going to just keep me grounded so I don't get distracted. And Lars started noticing my making, and he just came up to me one day and he's like, hey, so your stuff is like really like tight and like silhouettes and you can see it, like, right? He's like, you don't like alter anything. I'm like, yeah. He's like, do me a favor. I want you to throw a cylinder and like, you know, you shape it, do whatever you want. I throw this thing. I get it real nice. He's like, all right, don't freak out. I'm like, what are you going to do? He looked at it. He looked me dead in the eyes. He takes his hands like he's going to flick something and bashes it in the side. And he said, leave it. And it had like this little indent just in this one spot, mm-hmm. indention. I was upset. So after that, we took it to the rest of the process, and it ended up being one of my favorite pieces that I ever made. Mm. And through that, it got me to kind of like get out of my own way a little bit and like, okay, let's explore more of this like altered form stuff. Mm. I can still be tight and things could be still look like they're very nice, but having something that's a little more interactive, mm. something that's a little more interesting in spaces just allows for, I don't know, a little bit more visually of like, hey, this is more interesting like to see. It's more interesting to like to touch, to look at. And with my work, I very much am looking for interaction with me versus the person yeah. that's like purchasing or looking at my stuff. If I'm not there and they see my cup, like I want that to be like you are having an interaction with myself of some type. So like something about it needs to speak to you. You'd mm-hmm. be able to see at least a part of me inside of that thing. And the longer people touch things, what I've noticed is the more likely they are to buy it. Sure. So if I can keep it interesting and they just keep coming back like that one's really nice and mm-hmm. they keep touching it, I'm like, touch it one more time, you're going to have to buy it.
So we're talking about like yeah. a breaking up of uniformity or like texture mm-hmm. or things like that?
Yeah. So everything, I rarely ever make anything that is the same across the board. One of the things I least hate about pottery is when people ask me for commissions of stuff. They're like, I want to get a set of like of cups or whatever? I'm like, I make cups. You can come check out my studio and pick out as many as you want. They'll all look like they were made by me, but all be different.
Right.
Nothing stresses me out more than trying to make the same thing multiple times. Just can't.
Yeah.
Whatever reason, it just drives me crazy.
And it seems like that's an incredibly difficult thing to do in this medium, especially because there's so many steps along the process.
Right.
Right. Because you may want to review what the actual steps are because I know very few of them. But in terms of like, even if you sculpt two things that are exactly the same in the first couple stages of the process, once they get in the kiln, go with God.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, very, very much. I was actually joking with my coworkers today. Like, sometimes you just got to pray it up the kiln gods and like, hopefully you're in their favor this time.
Yeah.
But in the multiple processes, the clay is constantly changing in shape. So let's say I throw a thing on the wheel. It's about 6 inches tall. Mm. As it's drying, what's happening is like the water is being evaporated out of there.
Sure.
And so it's first off losing weight. And then also with that extra space, it's also shrinking. Mm. So it starts off 6 inches tall. You just made it. But by the time you get to the next stage, it's about maybe like half an inch smaller. Mm. Maybe don't notice it that much. Then we take it to trimming stage. So you take some of that weight off of it anyway. And you kind of shrink it down even further from like trimming if you're making like a foot or if it's just another step. From there, we get to more of a bone dry situation. So it's still shrinking some more. Mm. And then we put in the kiln for the first time. In the first kiln firing for your bisque fire, what we're doing is fully evaporating all the water and moisture out of the thing and chemically changing that clay from clay to ceramic. Mm-hmm. So it's more of like a glassy material. And so this is where it's more brittle, where you can't reconstitute it. You can't, no matter how much water you soak it in, it's not going to be able to be pliable again. It's just like a hard surface. So from there, it's now even shorter. Hmm. We then put glaze on it. Then you put in the kiln again, and then it shrinks even further. So something that started off 6 inches might, by the end of it, depending on the clay body, shrink all the way down from 5 to 5 inches, maybe 4 inches. So we have a lot of students, or I've ran into a lot of my students, where their first few times they go, they make their thing, and then it comes out, and they always go, wow, that's much smaller than what I'm like, yeah, it is. Yep. it's just part of it. You always got to make them bigger at first, and they always feel like they're so big. But by the end of the process, they're like just the right size that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. So as far as when you got to the point of taking ceramics at a university level.
Yes.
My wife, who you've met many times.
Yes.
Is a graphic designer, got that degree from a university. So I'm fairly familiar with how, like, that realm of secondary art education works, where it's, mm-hmm. like, long studio classes and critiques and things of that nature. Is it similar in ceramics? And if so, like, how different is it?
Similar, yes, as in long studio hours of you're in there. Maybe the thing that's changing in the room is the instructor.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily for me, in the comparisons from like where I was taking classes are like the graphic design was in a different building and also in a room where there was no windows.
Ooh.
And like just a bunch of computers, no windows, and you're in there for like 8+ hours and like the teachers are changing, but it's just you and the same cats the entire time. I was like, I already didn't like sitting in front of a computer for that for very long anyway, but I was like, I'll stick it out because maybe I'll get used to this and whatever. No, I can't do it. Just can't. Anyways, so like that's that one. And it's graphic design is a little more competitive in nature because you're competing against all these other people that are like making designs as well. And like one person who needs like somebody to design a thing is going to choose one of you.
Yeah.
And you got to impress them enough so hopefully like they come back. Right. Mm-hmm. In pottery, yes, there's a little bit of competition, but it's not like I'm competing versus you for money. I feel like it's more like physical competition,
yeah, yeah.
Like I could out bench press you or something like that, like type situation. Like I look at this thing I made out of 10 pounds, like I'm gonna try to do it with 12 pounds, and then we have more of that. It's like more like friendly, like competition stuff. Nothing that we're trying to compare. Like this is my thing versus your thing. It's like look at this thing I made. And it's like oh that's cool, and like there's a little bit more celebratory of like your effort in pottery than there is graphic design. Graphic design just seems like there's a lot of work, and those who know it can recognize it, like the work you put in. But those outside of the graphic design world, like just normal people walking off the street, they're like, well, I can do better than that.
Right.
They're always like, oh, they're like, why don't you just use something from clip art or whatever? Or the worst is when, from what I've, when I try to do a little bit of stuff on the side, is everybody has an idea or try to critique your graphic design stuff. All the time, well, just do it this way, and they want you to make it simpler, or like something like, well, if you can do it, then do it yourself.
Yep.
With pottery, a lot of people see that they're like, whoa, and they're already impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Graphic design, like you have to like show a lot more like gusto, or like show a lot more of the back end stuff to impress these people. And even with that, like they still are like, no big deal. But that's with most arts, I think. There's kind of like this attitude of, it's cool, but not like super impressive for whatever reason. With pottery, like when people see it, there's something mesmerizing about it. And people are just a little more impressed with it. They do think when they first watch it, like, oh, I want to do that. And then they try it and they're like, that's hard. I'm like, I know.
Yeah, I wonder if that process is part of it, because I think there's a decently solid societal awareness of the fact that there is a process, even if not all the steps to it, as far as pottery, where, and I think it also depends on like how you're interfacing with this stuff, right? Because when we're talking about something like graphic design, the intent is for it to almost not be noticeable or not to be noticed that it was made. Like it should just be part of the brand landscape or whatever
Is. Yeah. There's more of a subtlety to like, just like things like the FedEx with like that arrow. When you notice it, you notice it. But when you don't notice it for years and someone finally points it out to you, you're like, huh, that's clever, right? And it's like small little things like that that make graphic design like a really clever, almost mysterious type of art to me. with pottery, it's just like, it's just physical, man. And it's just like those who can do it and do it very well and make it look effortless, for whatever reason, just like with anything, if you see someone do it and they're like the peak of their sport or whatever, and they do it really well, wow, it's impressive.
Yeah, no, the way you were describing the different attitudes like within the classroom setting, it kind of reminded me of like two different schools of shonen anime to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Of like, is it the one where you're just trying to be the best, or is it the one where you are sharpening one another?
Yeah.
Like, and just improving on process for the sake of process?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very wild, like the two different like schools of, and it's kind of like just the schools of 3D art versus like 2D art. A lot of people, they either, like when it comes to like first starting out with like artistic stuff, it's, for the most part, I think kids are drawing a lot. And then something out there discourages them. They're like, I can't draw. And it's like, what do you mean? You've been drawing for years.
Yeah.
Like, but they're just stick figures. And keep going.
XKCD is still a functioning webcomic.
Yeah, it's great and it's hilarious. Yep. So just like, I don't know, but there's something about 2D art that I think gets discouraging faster than 3D art does, because 3D art, I think, can be used in multiple facets that then gets disguised as like it's not art, because most 3D processes, let's say like even pottery, for the most part, started off as more of like a craftsman type situation. Woodworking, like even like building houses and all that, like that's like craftsmanship stuff. And like those who got really good at the craft can then add artistic flair to it. Then it looks like a piece of art versus like this is a functional piece of equipment or something. And getting... From when I teach, I try to instill that in my students. Like, hey, let you know, off the jump. First off, I ask, like, how many of you came in here wanting to make a mug? 90% of them are like, me. It's me. I'm like, great. Your first one's maybe not going to be your favorite. But the one that you make next session and the session after that and the session after that, those are all going to build upon each other. Mm. And then it's going to – your first one, you're going to look at that and you're like, look at this paperweight. And that this last one, you're going to be like, this is a good one. And we're building upon those skills to then make, like, your ideal mug. But your first one, don't expect to be ideal first off. I'm going to let you know right now. It's going to be smaller than what you expect. And it's going to weigh a lot. It's not going to be comfortable. But we're going to build on the skills to get you to making your ideal mug. Mm. So when by the time you eventually leave me, either you go to another class or you move town or you just say, like, I'm just done making pottery. Mm. You have something that you're super proud of, and maybe you use it every day. I'd rather you do that and use your stuff all the time and be super proud of the effort you put in than have, like, the one thing like, I did it. I made a mug, but I don't use it because it's heavy. I don't use it because it's small. Like, make something. Let's make it really good and get good at that thing. And then you'll be using it for years, and then you have a more of a positive conversation about your experience than a I did it and it was fine.
Yeah, and that barrier of doing something once and having maybe minimal or no satisfaction, but there being like that foundation.
Yeah,
that's a really tough part of the creative process to be in. Of the like, it feels bad now, but it will get better.
Yeah, yeah,
that's rough.
Mm-hmm. Very much like I'd say anything we do. When we first learned how to walk, when you whatnot as a kid, like if you watch kids down there walking, like there's a determination to keep standing up, keep trying, and somehow down the line we stop trying things.
Yeah,
because we're like, well, I have enough. Then why would I try to do more? That essentially is like trying to reinvigorate that level of like this is exciting, or and there's like. There's more of a purpose than like getting to the end result. There's pleasure and excitement and overall just opportunity throughout the process to get to enjoy things, dislike things, but still end up in the same with your like, the end goal of being like this is the thing I accomplished.
Yeah, and yeah, I think it is that sort of desire. I don't think we ever totally lose that desire to like explore.
Right.
But failure just feels way more daunting and worse. And I think sometimes about how there's this, you know, going back to the little kid example of trying to walk. there's this sentiment sometimes that's bandied around that it's kind of funny that we will like clap or cheer for a small child doing something very simple that's necessary to life. But also there, and no one in that instance is saying there's something wrong with that, because like that's how you encourage children. Yeah. But like, do we ever outgrow that though?
Oh, true.
It's like, do we ever? I think that there's something in this of why there is a more recent culture in a sort of self-care sense, or you know, to throw it back to like 5 or 6 years ago, the adulting, whatever,
yes.
if that's a word we yes. still use, of like being satisfied or congratulatory of self for doing what you have to do.
Yeah.
And I think that also would breed the ability to like congratulate yourself for trying.
Yeah, yeah.
On a level.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. It's like, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to try new things when the specter of failure is there.
Yeah. And it's just, it builds upon, like, you know, all the years of, like, we're trying something, it didn't work. Like, you try to ask out that person, they shot you down. Mm. You tried to, you know, try out for the football team and you weren't good enough. You tried to play an instrument and, like, it was hard, so you gave up. Or, like, someone told you, like, maybe you shouldn't do that. And there's, like, all those things. And now that we're adults and we experienced, like, a whole bunch of that,
yep.
now it's like, okay. Maybe we didn't get as much encouragement of not a lot of claps or congratulatory stuff. And some people dislike that kind of thing. But I like to still kind of push that anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, no, I'm going to, like, you're doing a good job. Like, do you understand, like, how hard this experience is that you're going through right now? You understand, like, just because you're good at this thing doesn't translate into doing this thing. And I get a couple students every once in a while that are, they're really good at painting. Mm. They're really good at, like, writing music. They're really good at this stuff. But they're really, quote-unquote, suck at pottery.
And their, like, first time in a studio.
Yeah, and I'm like, what makes you think that? How many hours did you spend writing songs? How many hours did you spend drawing and painting and that kind of stuff? Understand that you come into the studio for 3 hours during our class. There's an hour and a half of that of me talking. And then you're trying to put in practice words that I just regurgitated out to you, and then I'm here to help coach you and cue you into trying to be successful. And each one of these steps is like a different skill that builds upon another skill. So you're only spending about like maybe a couple minutes in that one skill before you move on to the next skill that then builds onto the next skill and into the next skill. So you're making like a fraction of a percentage of development in each one of these skills than to make a thing.
Yeah.
So when we say at the campus, I'm not sure if I heard it from anywhere else, but we usually say like, hey, if you want to make one really good pot, you're going to have to make 100 really not so great pots.
Right.
but you get that one really good one, you just have to make the same thing over and over and over again. We encourage, clearly, like I say, it's not like the best of the ones, but it's the best in each one. And as an instructor, it's our goal to try to help them find the best thing in each one of the things they're doing.
Yeah.
It keeps them more motivated and keeps them more engaged in there.
Hmm.
But it's also my job as the instructor to keep pushing the boundaries and let them know, like, hey, we're getting there, but we haven't arrived yet.
Yeah.
Let's get there.
No, and I'm glad you pointed that out, because that idea of finding the value in each of the ones that are on the journey.
Yeah.
Because when you said, you know, 100 not great pots to get to one really good one, mm-hmm. that it made me think, well, at what point, surely at certain points during those other 99 or 100, you're going to think, maybe I'm at the really good one now.
Yeah.
And then you go, but I can do better. And
yeah.
that's not disparaging of where you were. It's a step in the process.
Yeah. Like, there's this part that I liked. Let's do that again. But there's this part I didn't quite like. How do I fix that and make that a little bit better? And it's incremental steps to making, like, your process better, and then taking those learnings that you learned through what I've learned through clay and then applying that to my own life has been a newer development I've been kind of putting into, like, taking, like, how I focus on my art. And now I take that same energy and now I'm focusing kind of on my finances and like incrementally just kind of like trying to make that a little bit better as I'm still progressing over here. But now I've learned all these things here that now translate over here. And then I take those and then I put them over here into, like, let's say my working out. And then from here, and then we'll say the relationships with my parents and that, how do I make things incrementally better with each interaction that I've learned from trying to develop this skill of the skill of making pottery. How do I take those lessons and put them elsewhere?
Yeah. And while there's certainly always value in trying to find the good parts, if any, and there probably are some in anything like that, there's also that level of catharsis of getting into the end of something and going, this was not a good day. This is bad.
Yes.
And to that point, how much goes on around Clay Lady's campus of just like, well, this came out of the kiln garbage, smash, and just throwing it against a wall and whatnot?
Well, we have this thing called once a year called the Ugly Pot Throw.
Ah.
And it's like a celebratory, like it's, we call it the campus birthday. It was like the kind of the day that the idea of the Clay Ladies campus has kind of come together. And it's like the birthday celebration where we collect quote unquote ugly pots from the campus artists, and so we invite our students to come. And it's usually on a Saturday, but it's turned into like a big celebration now. We're like, now we have music going, we're unloading kilns and like showing people like more of the process, have people demoing. But during that, we have this on the side of the building, we have this huge target. It's on the side of the building, and you get to sign up, and we give you a pot. You line up on this line, you look at the target, and it has like a quote, and the quote says, "I'm gonna make the next one better." And you take it, you throw it, it explodes.
Nice.
I cannot tell you how awesome that felt to do for the first time when I first moved here about 8 years ago. Heard about it, and I'm like, "Oh, okay, you know, I'll go to that." Sounds weird. Why would I break my pots? And then as soon as like it left my hand and then exploded, I'd like, you would have thought like I like hit a home run or something. I was just so excited. I was like, I gotta do that again. I got plenty in the car. And just kept breaking stuff. But through that, like we then take the scraps and we try to reuse them or like donate them to somebody who's doing like mosaic stuff or like making like another art piece. So like we're constantly doing stuff with our broken pieces to help like build in, like we can take these lessons and make them into something beautiful.
Wow.
So it's a constant full circle each time. But also in the process, I run like a weekend workshop. It's like 2 days. It's pretty intense where the two students come in. I'm like, all right, I do like a demo of like, let's say throwing cylinders. I'm like, all right, for the next 2 hours, all we're doing is throwing cylinders. You're going to keep your first one and put it off to the side. Everything from the first one to your last one, you're going to smash it. We'll rework it later, but smash it, get another ball of clay, make a cylinder, smash it, rinse, wash, repeat. After 2 hours, we take your first one, your last one, put them next to each other, and see like how much you possibly improved, how much you maybe didn't improve. Like, it's cool to see the light bulbs go off in people's heads when they're like, you're like, we are just doing this one thing, and we're getting more of that time under tension of like, we are like, do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. And seeing and be like, oh, maybe I am squeezing too hard in some areas. Maybe I'm holding my body position weird. Maybe I'm using too much water. Maybe this isn't my favorite type of clay to work with. Maybe I should change my wheel, like change the piece of equipment that I'm sitting on. Like going through those practices and like trying to troubleshoot and figure out like what works for them, what doesn't. And like things and give them something to work on. So it's constantly, it's pushing them forward and they don't have to stay. They don't have like, I call it the perfect pot syndrome where like they make their one thing and it's my precious. And like, I have to take care of it. I have to fix it. And like, they spend so much time on it that you're not learning anything because you're trying to make it perfect. So I run the workshop so I can get people out of that mindset. They purchase the clay with like the registration and we smash all the pots. They rework the clay. And then by the end of it, they get to take all that clay home. They don't get to take any of the pots they made because we smashed all of them.
Right.
But now they have all this skill that they built up for over the past 48 hours of like, we just did it.
Wow.
And so they go into their next round of classes a little bit more of a chip on their shoulder, a little bit more like I can actually tackle possibly like heavier amounts of clay. I could tackle more complex shapes because we built a better foundation than we're going into the last session.
Yeah, God, that's really cool. There's certainly that sort of perfect pot syndrome as a overarch of a lot of different types of creativity.
Uh-huh.
It's so paralyzing.
Yes,
like it. A lot of the time, will stop you from doing anything.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. My job, I tell people all the time, like, my job is not to get you to, is to get you to get past that. Mm-hmm. Release. Let clay class be like your therapy or whatever you want to call it. But in here, we don't know what time is. I'm here to tell you what time it is because you got to get out. But like, you're here to connect with yourself, with your fellow classmates that are doing the same thing, and just be here and let the weight of the world just go away. Mm. Just give them like a 3-hour space. That I come in here and what happened to me today at work, what happened at home, whatever, like, you know, driving in traffic, because we know Nashville traffic, like all the stuff doesn't matter because I'm here, and it gives them this time just to work on themselves that they might not necessarily get anywhere else.
And you know, we talked about before how, you know, every kid draws, but we drop that at some point. Mm-hmm. And there's this strange allure to things like pottery or ceramics. Do you think the, as not necessarily an alternative, but like a space that more people maybe occupy at a later stage in life, do you think that has anything to do with, like, because there's a utilitarian aspect, because there's a tactile aspect, there's maybe a lower bar to satisfaction, if not a, like, lower bar to being good at it? I guess what I'm getting at is that it seems like if you feel like I'm just making stick figures, there is less input and also potentially less reward.
Mm, yeah.
Whereas if you're throwing a piece of clay, that is still a tangible object.
Yeah.
Even at the end of the day, if it's a bad leaky mug,
yeah,
it is a physical thing that you got your hands on.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that breeds a like lower bar for some level of satisfaction.
Yeah, because everybody wants to be like, well, I've spent all this money, I want to get something. And we run into that a little bit with some of our workshops. So it's like a demo only. You come in, you watch. It's basically like a live in-person YouTube video. Is how I've started phrasing it, and it makes a lot more sense. You come in and you just say, you come and watch me. I'm gonna demo and show you how to make a bowl out of 25 pounds of clay. Mm. Like on the wheel, we're just gonna get into it. And like, this is how I hold my body. Then like, talk about all these things that you're maybe not gonna think about if you were even gonna tackle that. Mm-hmm. And just get some of that information out there in the world. But then we run into the issue of like, well, I'm not gonna get anything afterwards. Like, I can't do it with him. Like, no, because if you're going to be so hands-on and with pottery, when like you start getting into it, you're not listening anymore.
Mm.
Because like, you're so focused on the apparatus that you're trying to manipulate.
Yeah.
Most people tend to hold their breath first off. And then with that, like, you're not oxygen to the brain. So everything starts to shut down. They're just trying to keep you alive.
Interesting.
And so like, you're not hearing anymore. And then after they relax or take their hands off, they finally go, what? And you're just looking at them like, I've been talking to you for 10 minutes. Just giving them a space like, hey, you can get as a lot more learning from watching and hearing and being able to ask questions.
Mm.
And then you put into practice what you retain. And that's why we have the class, so you have time to practice these things, and we have the workshops so that you're able to interact more with our different instructors and also just get more of that information. But yeah, that tactile, like, hey, at the end of the day or end of the weekend or end of the workshop or end of the class, like, I had like a thing. People just like to see a reward for effort of any type for the most part, even if that effort is I drove somewhere and I sat down and watched the thing.
Right.
They're more inclined to pay for something if they get something in return.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't have that, we have to do a little more explaining, or sure, they have to really be into it and they already understand like the benefit and the value of that.
Mm.
So how do we showcase the value to keep people to buy in to that? And that's more business talk.
Sure.
Which goes over my head sometimes. Sometimes I get into it. But yeah.
Yeah, thinking about things we were talking about a couple minutes ago in terms of the perfect pot syndrome and the idea of like, don't be too precious about things, process rather than product. I've heard this sentiment fairly recently. Is it ever annoying when these things that you hear as like lessons turn out to actually be true?
Yes.
And why is that so annoying? It's like, ah, dang it. Yeah, fine.
Yeah, like, you should pay your bills on time, you know? That was one of the first lessons I learned. Like, you know, when you venture out on your own, you're like, It's fine.
They're not going to turn it off.
They're not going to turn it off.
Empty threat.
Next thing you know, like, you're watching TV and your electricity goes out. And you're like, oh.
Called my bluff.
They weren't joking when they said they would turn it off, did they? I guess they're going to come up with all this money. Yeah, I think, yeah, just like the work part of it. And like, we have to learn these lessons that, for the most part, most of us don't want to. But through experiences, we kind of get that. And I think arts in general are a safe way to kind of learn those things without like having like, you know, your electricity turned off.
Right.
Or like, you know, you can't get to work because you didn't put gas in the car. Like, or we can kind of push the needle of like, maybe that won't happen. And like, well, science says it will, but you know, I'll let you try that out. Without like really hurting themselves.
Yeah. So, and that's a really interesting idea because it is a safe space, but I feel like because it is like creativity in general, making art in general is like, it's, you know, pretty high on the hierarchy of needs, of creativity, self-actualization and whatnot. So I feel like there's a degree to which even though it is like almost inherently a safe, welcoming, exploratory space, like we've been talking about, we put so much pressure on it to like, and on ourselves to perform within that space to make it worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh.
Rough.
That is rough. Ancillary question from your example of the live YouTube video. Is 25 pounds of clay a lot?
It's quite a bit.
I'm realizing I have no conception of like where the line is of like, now this is a lot to handle.
Yeah. So the pottery wheel, depending on which one you get and whatnot, they can go like RPMs of up to like 300, 400 rotations per minute, which is it's fast.
Yeah, that's like the low end of a car engine.
Yeah, so you put a piece of something on there that's attached and that thing starts spinning as well. And then you're trying to put your hands and your body weight against that. So you get this thing pushing against you the entire time. If you're not properly positioned, you're braced right and like leaning and like engagement of certain muscle groups, this thing's going to beat you up. It's like wrestling a wild pig, man, sometimes. And
you wrestled a wild pig?
I mean, not on purpose. it's this thing's moving at a speed, and like I'm trying to learn the skill, like how do I just either take that in sections, or maybe we just have to, if you want to get good at this, you got to go to the gym. Maybe you got to get a look, like if your goal is to do a certain amount of thing, like we got to learn how to properly brace ourselves, how to lean into like discomfort and that kind of thing. And that stuff leads into that. You can kind of learn that in a safer environment and kind of like in more of a gym setting than like a pottery setting. That'd be like, so that way they could come more hand in hand. Cause this is a very physical medium, unlike sketching, drawing, painting, where you're using a lot of your actual body to manipulate this object. And so some people, when they do pottery for the first time, I always tell them, like, listen, after today, you might wake up tomorrow and feel really sore. Because you may have been using muscles that you don't usually use that often, and then you're, like, squeezing them tight, you're pushing against the thing, you're holding a thing for, like, 10 minutes. Like, hold on to a ball that weighs, like, 10 pounds. Just hold on to that for 10 straight minutes. Like, just in your hands. Stand up, just hold on to it. Tell me that you don't be like, man, I'm tired. Just, you know, just like, it's just like we're manipulating an object and trying to make it into a thing. And that's the skill in itself. Like, how do we get our body to manipulate that thing to make a thing for ourselves, for a person, for a building or whatever? Like we're using ourselves, and I feel that as pottery, we're allowed to put more of ourselves into it because we get to use more of that physical labor.
Yeah.
But it can be exhausting. Being part of the campus gives me access to like all the clay, like materials. I have more time like to learn like kiln stuff, like how like get more of the ins and outs of how like kilns work, which is another aspect of things that we didn't even touch on because we're talking about the making. That process, but once it goes in the kiln, that's a whole nother science that's happening.
Yeah.
And so getting a better understanding of that for the past couple of years has been pretty awesome. Still, like, still very novice in that kind of stuff in comparison to some of my coworkers.
But, despite the fact that you are the kiln repair specialist.
Like, I will fix it, but run it from like start to finish and be like, I don't know. You can turn it on. We can put fire in it. Great. But like getting things to be like, because there's so much any volatile things that are happening in there from when it, depending on like the kiln, from electric kilns to gas kilns to wood fired kilns, that they all run kind of different. More electric kilns, I could get you up and running and I can get you going. But when it comes to like, hey, how do I fix this burner on my gas kiln, or the how do I make this wood kiln work better? But you got to talk to Joseph. He knows he knows more of that stuff, and that's more his wheelhouse of like numbers than mine. Mine is like just plug and play, like building with Legos. Done. Like just take this part out, put this part back in. Great. Being able to see a problem and kind of alter for that, I could do that. But when it comes to like the more like math, chemistry stuff, it's like that stuff is like, whoo, that's hard for my brain to comprehend, but we're getting better at it throughout the years.
Yeah. And when it comes to something more like the wood fire or the gas, is it, it sounds almost like the kiln, like the things you put in the kiln, is this kind of living object that you have to like monitor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it comes to like the wood kilns, gas kilns, those require more like your actual attention. Electric kilns, you like hit a button and you walk away.
Sure.
Like you walk away, next day it's done. You're like, great. Wood kilns, like we got to be next to it and like monitor the temperature, because you're feeding that thing the wood, which builds the heat. And when it starts to drop in temperature, you got to be able to hustle. And certain type of wood heats up different than other pieces. And like, so knowing that kind of stuff. And then sometimes like there's like different types of drafting that's happening. And so there's parts of the kiln, some of it gets colder than the others, and you wanted it to be more even. So you have to close off some of the stuff, so it forces more of the heat upward. It's wild. It's so cool when you start to get into it. It's so cool to think about. But when you're first wrapping your head around it, like that's like out of my pay grade. It's only been like the past like couple of years that I'm getting more of an understanding. So I'm like, that's cool. Let me try. Like, let me try a thing. But that's for when I actually do a kiln by myself and not with like everybody's pots in it, that I can experiment more with that.
Sure.
So that's the goal for the beginning of this next year, is fill up two of those kilns with just my stuff and just let me just try it.
Yeah.
Like, let's just see it. If my pots don't turn out, they don't turn out. But I just want to make stuff and just see. Because that's my new, like, fascination. Besides, like, surface decoration stuff, it's like, how do I make this thing make a cool thing?
Yeah.
Out of there. Gas kiln's a little more straightforward. You just turn on propane, but it's also, like, pressure of the gas that then builds heat and all that. And, yeah, and then there's dampeners and all that kind of stuff. So it's just moving flame around in, like, a box. How do I make flame move and control that? So it's like fire bending.
No, like we've been talking about this whole time. It's exploration and trying new things.
Always.
I think that's about our time. Thanks so much for talking.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. This was awesome. This was like very cool.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I had a good time.
Yeah, same.
Well, and thank you for listening. And as a reminder, we are here because of the National Public Library. So go get a library card.
Yeah, do it.
See you next time.